Welcome to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us today. Today's show features an on-site visit to Weston Farms, a 188-acre magnolia farm in Garner, North Carolina. Part of it is in Garner, North Carolina, and part of it is in Johnston County. Our guest today is Erin Weston, the young woman who runs the magnolia farm. You are in for a sweet behind-the-scenes tour in this Courage Cocktail. Please welcome Erin Weston, Creative Director of Weston Farms.
Leanne, thank you so much for having an interest in my story and hosting me.
Oh, it's so delicious. It took me, you got to pull me away from the farm. So let's go through a few things today. We are going to title this menu option today's brew as Magnolia Magic. Put on your boots as we wander through the fields of the farm. Seriously, you had better at least pour yourself a long glass of sweet tea, because for the next hour, you are in the South. And is there anything more evocative of Southern style than a magnolia? Let's cue up our soundtracks today and take a tour. Erin, we'll need your help to explain some of these sounds and why they matter so much to your story. Listener, you're going to hear the clickety-click-click of my camera. Why? Well, when I go on site, I do it all, usually when we're trekking over hills and through the brush. We were moving so fast that you will hear Erin's voice go in and out sometimes. No, it's not your radio signal, nor is it your internet connection. It's me struggling to keep up with her, and she moves fast. Are you ready? Let's go. Its first track here is about a minute long. It's all about the water, birds, and what it feels like to visit a suburban farm. Inside this track, we hear about Erin's education in plants from the inside out.
We are heading to the workshop. There's about 10 acres of water on the farm here, so you get a lot of different birds. You can hear the highway.
Yes.
You can hear Highway 70 here, just
it's
gently.
It's muffled. It's not noisy.
But you can hear it.
It's
like an ocean.
Yes.
Do you hear the birds? Something that's being reclaimed to the right, but it's basically my grad school. It's where I grew plants in pots, and part of my business is that I was able to learn about plants and such by doing the entire time. And I sold plants in containers, but there's no real future for creativity for that to be my expression. So it was from the plants in pots that I started taking clippings and making the decorations that I'm known for now. But that's something that I've abandoned. And the beginning of this year, 2016, I started reclaiming the space, and this has all been cleared out and planted with what's next.
Erin, we grabbed that sound as we were taking a tour of the farm, and I love the way you framed that in terms of that's your graduate space. Mm-hmm. What's going on for 2016?
Well, I founded Weston Farms in 2002 with the singular goal of growing luxury. And to date, the best expression has been my very traditional Southern magnolia wreaths, garlands, and natural accessories. And in 2016, I'm very interested in expanding my horizons, marrying art and horticulture, and finding some expressions that are going into much more of a, for lack of a better word, avant-garde direction.
And boy, you're going there. We're going to jump into that part of the story at the second half of our show. I want to continue on our tour. Are you ready to come along?
Absolutely.
Okay. The next two soundtracks are all about water. And listener, what goes in must come out. This first track is the watering system inside the greenhouse.
Yeah.
And before we talk, we're going to listen to this next soundtrack, which is draining the water from the greenhouse. Okay, let's talk about that greenhouse. That has a particularly interesting history, Erin.
It certainly does. There are very few spaces like this in the world. The greenhouse was constructed in 1965, and it was built to accommodate what eventually became, get this, the world's largest guppy farm.
Okay. The world's largest guppy farm. Who knew? And that was when, in 1965?
The foundation was poured in 1965. And for any of the listeners out there that are not familiar with a guppy, they are these small, colorful, freshwater tropical fish. And they're not able to live outdoors in the winters here. So the greenhouses were built to accommodate them being pulled in. And basically, it's where they grew. And then many stores, you know, what we would think of as the old-fashioned Kmarts and just stores like that that you would go to would have tanks, a pet store, so to speak. And so they were distributed all through the Southeast and, or actually the country.
So these history is that that property has always been used in creative, edgy ways. Who knew that in the 60s there was a taking over of guppies? Mm-hmm. But I can see now a pattern developing between kind of fresh ideas that take off. So are we ready to continue our sound tour?
Please.
Okay. The next segment is longer, listener, than all the others. It's almost 5 minutes. I have to cue it up by reading a section called from Dr. Seuss's book, The Lorax. I am the Lorax. I speak for the trees. I speak for the trees, for the trees have no tongues. I'm asking you, sir, at the top of my lungs, oh, please do not cut down another one. And so the story goes like this. As you listen to this track, we're going to take you on a tour for some really funky examples of horticulture. I really think that we should hold your expectations and enjoy this track, our little visit to Conifer Way, and all sorts of exciting examples.
We're standing in front of a miniature bald
cypress collection. And my father loves this tree. It's a native, but in the U.S. they weren't doing an incredible amount of work on naming the cultivars, and most of the work was being done in Europe. And these are all miniature bald cypress, and they're mitigating the streams of the farm. There's over 1,000 of these miniature bald cypress planted out, and you can see the knees. See how the knees are forming?
Yeah, you see that in swampland.
And so what you're seeing is almost a miniature bald cypress forest.
Amazing. It's
Isn't
quite
cool?
beautiful. And here it is in the midst of February, Garner. Wake, 6 miles from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Very close to the capital. And this is Cryptomeria, and I think its feature, it's not a plant that would ever really be in the landscape because it's just a little oddity. It's not a neat, round shrub. It's something calling attention to itself. It's a real specimen.
It is. It is. It's like it's softer than pine needles so that we can bring you with us, along with us in this journey. It's very much like a Norfolk pine. It's very flexible, long, and kind of like noodly-like, isn't it? I'll be sure to put pictures up on this.
Like fireworks.
They're like fireworks because they have these little pockets of, you know, blooming greens. It's really spectacular. I could see why this tree is a specimen tree, because mm-hmm. it's not what you expect.
Right. It's not a hedge.
It's like a Dr. Seuss
bee. It is totally a Dr. Seuss plant. There's a lot of Dr. Seuss plants here. And the Dr. Seuss plants that also had color incorporated are something that I was able to find had commercial value for me. And it's something that I could add to what I was doing that actually could allow me to keep the farm. I couldn't keep the farm by selling a few
specimen trees every year. Mm-hmm. And that really, after a while, no longer challenged the creative aspects of my brain. You know, because after you discover the amazing thing, if you can't sell it, then you're a hobbyist.
Yes.
It comes down to being a hobbyist. And I needed to have, like, an ongoing creative expression. And that's what things like these yellow conifers, they're first trialed. I call this area Conifer Way, but they're first trialed in Conifer Way. And then if they work well in, as the botanical ingredients in wreaths, garlands, or other accessories that we're making, they start to go into production. And you can stand back here and you can see different colors. The one closest to us is Sudsworth Gold, and it's in a combination and pattern that I call Goldfinch. And other ones are in different combinations. There's a gold that's used in a pattern called High Point Tapestry. And all of the different colors have different applications for patterns in the wreaths.
And texture?
Mm-hmm.
And do they smell different?
They do, but I try to only grow things that are hypoallergenic.
So that people aren't reactive.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take some pictures here, and you're going to listen to the camera.
Click away.
We're walking to the high point of the farm. Come along for a walk.
What's under our feet right now?
This grass is Emeldoisia, and the best and worst attribute is that it is incredibly slow growing. So it establishes very slowly, but it will only have to be cut once a year. We have parts on the dams of the farm where the, you know, it would be easy for something to wash away that have never been cut. And a lot of times people think turf is a bad thing. But used in the right ways, turf is a very, very responsible ecological choice. The problems are if somebody wants turf green year-round and they go to extraordinary measures to have turf. But a turf like the Emeraldoisia, it doesn't have to be cut. It's something that if you control the weeds in, it does not, you know, it just doesn't use the same resources that even a perennial bed would.
No, and they're soft under our feet.
It's like a carpet. I liken it to sisal carpet.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is a tree that we're trialing and using in the wreaths and garlands. It's a cold-hardy eucalyptus that is, these are a few of the trees that are left, and they're part of a breeding program for fuels and for paper and pulps. And it's one of the few. We had a lot out that we were trialing, but these are only a few that did live. But again, it's a cold-hardy eucalyptus that is being trialed, and I saw the ornamental value of it. So
it's a beautiful
leaf. To get some seeds.
And what it is a beautiful red stems. The leaves themselves are a little bit bigger than a quarter, closer to a half dollar, and they're triangle shaped. But what's so interesting is it doesn't smell.
It's also the shapes are not like the usual silver dollar eucalyptus that you see growing around here.
No.
This one has linear lobum leaves, so they're much more like the ones you would see on the West Coast.
Much more elegant.
They're just long and skinny and beautiful. They're also extremely soft. For something that's hardy, I didn't expect the leaves to be this soft.
Well, there's so much texture going on in your farm. It's so much deeper and richer, this tapestry that you're building in. It's not just about magnolia, is it, Erin?
No, it's not. I often say that I am cultivating a palette to work with, which is a very different way of going about plant selection. Usually people are growing based on eventual height, width. I think that there's a lot of people working with color now, but our selections are being made in a drastically different way than the average landscape plant would be selected.
And that's because their objective is to incorporate it into your beautiful artwork.
Yes, they are being grown to be cut, which will always keep them in the ground. Although we are cutting the pieces off, we are never cutting the entire tree.
That describes, and we have a wonderful clip of us in listening to you snip, snip, snip. But one of the pieces, the features in that soundtrack was listening to traffic, listening to the suburban / urban farm, that whole ecosphere. Could you just tell us a little bit about what it's like working in a space like this?
I often feel as if I am in a bubble. I've really been blessed with having this bright spot of biodiversity in an otherwise suburban area. When people come and visit, they often get lost because they cannot fathom a farm being in town.
In town. We're talking in town, 7 miles from the Capitol building of Raleigh, North Carolina. You could run that on if you were so energetic in the morning.
Possibly.
So the other question I had is, there will be pictures that we'll throw up on social media. But Erin, there are homes all around you.
Oh, absolutely. Like mushrooms. And they just pop up. One of the nice things about the area surrounding the property is that my grandfather developed the roads and some of the infrastructure for the houses, although he didn't build all of the houses. But it was very important to my grandmother in the layout of the property that there be room for rest homes and childcare and churches.
And this was back in the 1960s?
It started, I think he broke ground in 1951.
Oh.
So it was a rather forward-thinking concept to make a true community.
So you have this in your bloodline, grandmother, father, daughter, horticulture, and this deep reverence for plants, for sustainable crops. Now, maybe we should head into the next track. It's a brief one. And this is a sound of streams that run throughout the property. You will hear birds and that muffled wind. I had my little microphone covered, but the wind was strong. Listen to this track. The reason I chose this particular track is because I wanted you to help me and kind of explain to our listener the use of water in this property and its design. It takes 10 acres, as you mentioned to us in the beginning. Water is everywhere.
It is true. My father and my grandfather worked very hard to find uses for some floodplains that were going to be a problem if they weren't mitigated with waters and drains and such. So over about 100 acres where all the curbs and gutters go, the ponds are engineered so that they hold the water and they drain to another pond and koi are in the ponds. And then the most interesting thing is that the streams are then mitigated by my father, who was the horticulturist for the city of Raleigh. He retired and he started collecting miniature bald cypress. I believe you spoke about those earlier. But what they do is they act as a biofiltration system, and they are taking in the pollution may come from storm runoff. I don't know if you noticed, but in the greenhouse and in those streams, even though it's storm runoff, it's clear.
It is clear. I noticed it very, very much. It was moving. That's why I tried to get that sound. The water is always moving. We're not talking still water.
And fish living in these ponds to this day, they're not the tropical ones. They are no longer there, but there are koi in the streams and then in the ponds, rather. And then in the streams, there are all sorts of small fish that can go through, and it's clear. So I didn't realize for years what an anomaly clear streams were.
We say that. You get it. When I listened to that track, there was another piece, an element that I wanted you to help explain to me again. Underneath our feet is this beautiful carpet of Emerald Zoysia?
It's Z-O-Y-S-I-A.
Okay.
Zoysia.
Zoysia. Okay, Zoysia. And I listened to it, it muffled our feet, but you mentioned that it also serves a great purpose of mitigating those ponds, the streams.
Well, my father, who is just the wisest horticulturist I have really been around, he uses plants as building blocks for infrastructure. So he has put this turf in to hold dams in place. Most choices that he makes have been from a practical standpoint. Now, I've gone in a different direction in growing things for the beauty. I consider myself to cultivate beauty. He's gone a step further and integrated beauty and being a building block. So this grass, the best and the worst feature, I say, is the fact that it grows so slowly. It makes this carpet of, I don't know, brick almost. It's not brick, but it's almost like a brick because it prevents the soil from eroding on the dams. And in our pathways throughout the garden, you can drive on it. It's very thick and it has to be mowed very little. There's parts of the farm where it's 7 years old and it's never been mowed. So it is not utilizing fossil fuels for the mowing. It is not creating unnecessary work. And it certainly isn't going to be in the middle of town, something we get a fine for growing 3 feet.
Well, and the other thing is that it's really safe. I have pictures. I came in studio today with my mud boots on because I just needed to just evoke that feeling and walking through the woods in the mud. But it's a very safe. And the reason I'm featuring so much space on this first half of our program with the sound is to help all of us, those living here in the Triangle and those who live beyond the Carolina Blue, to recognize that there are pieces in our landscapes that have been around for years that really do more than look beautiful. They do a tremendous amount of heavy lifting. But the reason that you may not notice it is because the sensitivity of the aesthetic and also the sense of history that goes along with it. Now, we're speaking of time. I'm going to head right back to the sound tour. We have another sound clip coming up, and it is, we have clumsily, Erin ran ahead of me, and she's climbing up the Zoysia Hill, excuse me, and wouldn't you know, I'm falling behind here. I'm clumsy, slow moving with my camera. Well, we finally got to the top, and this is what I heard.
We're going into the Magnolia property right now. We're going to be cutting some of these beautiful, beautiful leaves.
We listen to this and you weren't there, but I'm trying to bring you along with me. Erin's body posture changed 180 degrees. When you approached that tree, it was as though you were taking a piece of yourself. It was as though you were cutting your own hair. It's as though I see a musician hold and cradle their cello. When I saw you holding those scissors, the little snippers, I noticed you just reached for a particular branch. You knew exactly the right angle, and away you went. I can't tell you how bewitching that was to watch these beautiful, shiny green leaves. And there's something beautiful underneath these leaves, which maybe, hold on, we're going to play another track so our listener gets a full effect. This one describes what they look like.
So you have these just warrens of aisles, and instead of seeing stuff on shelves, these are beautiful, shiny leaves and magnificent plants with a, what do we call this underneath?
It's like dark grain leaves dipped in chocolate velvet.
Dipped in chocolate velvet. She says it better.
You do say it better. Erin, I had to include that. This is a very particular species, isn't it?
It is. One of the things when I realized it was the magnolia that chose me, it was manifest magnolia, so to speak, was that if I was going to grow something, it was imperative that it was the highest quality there is. And we have worked with a number of members from the International Magnolia Society, as well as magnolia trials. And the primary tree that we use is one that is just the shiniest leaf. It is a small leaf. Most people associate southern magnolia with a very large leaf, but we have chose varieties that are very distinct, very limited, and have worked with the hybridizers to find things that are not readily available.
And by the way, I'm going to grab a picture of this. You yourself have a little chocolate edging on you. You wore a beautiful jacket with a lovely little light brown, the same exact or very similar note of these leaves. When I was there, I got overwhelmed. That was the moment when I fell in love with the Magnolia Farm. It was because the blue sky, they were moving. There were all kinds of sounds that I heard. It was sounds that were wind moving on between these small leaves. And I think our tracks kind of pick that up. What I'd like to do now is listen to our last little track here, and it will be a perfect segue in talking about the business side of things. What you're hearing next is really revealing the true backbone of Weston Farms. It's all about fresh shipping.
White papers to wrap all of my products in because I think that they do give a clear sense of freshness.
Oh, Erin, that was for me an extremely provocative moment when I saw all this shipping operation. It's very organized. It's clear. And then you just pulled this beautiful white butcher's paper. Let's talk about shipping. Let's talk about your choices. How on earth did you fall into that?
Well, I learned that in order to fulfill my dream, which was create a national luxury product grown on my family land, it was going to be absolutely essential that I ship. And for the first 2 years of my journey, a local perennial nursery that has their downtime exactly when I pick up, they stepped in and helped me. So that was a great thing. But really, the dream of having a national luxury farm product was absolutely dependent on successful shipping.
And so, you know, you say that now looking back over many years, and I'm sure you've had many trials. We have to trial these particular specimens. We have to figure out what ships. Were there any surprises in that part of your journey?
The biggest surprise was that the fear leading up to shipping was much more difficult than the shipping itself.
Well, we are on Courage Cocktail. That was an appropriate response. So sometimes we do get frightened when we say, I don't know if this is the linchpin in my business. I'm not sure if it's going to work. And lo and behold, everything worked just great, didn't it?
Yes. And every single year, I'm taught a lesson. And I like to spend a lot of time with any person who has experienced a mistake. I think you're going to learn the most about what's gone wrong if you spend the time with someone who is, for lack of a better word, a victim. And thank goodness we only have had one victim a year. And the funniest one was a customer that said a wreath didn't look good. And I was very, you know, wanted to get to the bottom of this. And I said, let me see a picture. And I looked at the picture and I saw at once that it was the shape of the box. And I said, well, did you take this out of the box when you received it? And she said, no, I left it in the box. And I said, for how long? And she said, 3 months. And I realized through that it was absolutely necessary to put a sticker on the outside that said, open immediately. It was not something that occurred to me to say, fresh, open immediately. But this was a smart person. And I think it's very important to recognize ways that you can fine-tune communication so that the experience is a joy for everyone.
That's a great story because it's like stating the obvious. It's such a perfect explanation of maybe what could go wrong. What I'd like to do is this. The tour is never ending in the sustainable farm. The farm is open to the public in June and July. And all the more reason that this courage cocktail may go down especially sweetly. What happens in June and July over in your farm?
Well, my father, as I said, was the horticulturist for the city of Raleigh, and he was there for over 30 years. And one program that he developed at the city was that he planted daylily in the medians. And the reason he did that was because these are worker plants. They are going to live no matter what. And sometimes funding would go up and down. And when there was not funding for plants, he would have a labor force that was able to then divide the plants, and then they used it on the medians. This accomplished two things. You had a reliable bloom every single year, and it also cut down on mowing. The Department of Transportation recognized how successful this program was, and years later, he was growing, when he retired, daylily to also go on our medians in the state. And again, it makes a beautiful display of color once a year. After they are established, it's very interesting. People think pesticides are bad. And in general, herbicides and pesticides are bad, but plants are what gave that to the world. Daylily, magnolia, all of these things, they create a natural herbicide. And that's what prevents weeds from growing in those plants. And I think that's so interesting because when someone says this is all natural, well, we can't necessarily look at all natural and not ignore that death, poison ivy, sharks, they are all natural. But there's also things that are all natural that are worth looking at in nature. And weeds, you know, let's try to grow things that don't generate more weeds. In this area, daylily are incredibly durable plants. Again, his choice for growing these was not just a bloom. He's never divorced the bloom from the plant. It's a bigger picture. It's a 365-day worker.
The worker bees. Well, whenever any one of us is driving down a median strip and you see on that highway those beautiful cascading flowers, we know who to thank. Mm-hmm. Erin, that was just a delicious story. We have to go for a break, but when we return, Erin is going to come back with us. We're not letting her out of the studio. All too few of us have a hard time grasping this amazing concept of luxury, art history, and in fact, a shout out to the North Carolina Museum of Art. Stay tuned. Thank you.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please visit our website, wcomfm.org. To make a financial contribution, sponsor your favorite show, or help our many featured news and information programs, click on the PayPal donate button at the top of our main page. Again, please visit our website, wcomfm.org, and thanks for listening to your community radio station.
Welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us today. We produce this program out of the studios of WCOM LPFM in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, North Carolina. Well, if you've missed the first half of the show, you've got to run back tonight and listen to the podcast. We pour our Courage Cocktails into a to-go cup and we produce these lovely little links so that if you did miss the early half, you are not going to be too thirsty. First half of the program, we took you on a tour, a sound tour behind the scenes of Weston Farms in Garner, North Carolina, with none other than the lovely Erin Weston. She's still in the studio, and we're taking a turn into the avant-garde work of her artistry. As I said in closing out, very few of us understand this word luxury. But even fewer of us know what it means to lead into the spaces that are fresh and, dare I say, avant-garde. This April, our North Carolina Museum of Art is hosting Art in Bloom. It will be on April the 7th through the 10th on 2016. It's the NCMA's second annual Festival of Art and Flowers. And Erin, do tell, how did you get involved in this excursion?
North Carolina Art in Bloom is a national program that has been developed to celebrate a painting or a piece of art in the collection and have flower artists come in and interpret that work. I believe you had a wonderful word. What was that, Leanne?
This is an SAT word. Uh-huh. Now, grandmas and moms and kids out there, it's ekphrastic.
I love it. I love it. On the farm, I'm not necessarily learning new vocabulary, but it's something that I was able to join really through being a huge fan. I'm such a fan of the 140-acre art park that surrounds our North Carolina Museum of Art. And one of my friends who works there suggested that I become involved and reach out to the amazing Laura Fennin, who is leading up the efforts for the Art in Bloom program. And I reached out to her and said, I would love to participate. So she showed me all sorts of different places that I could create a work of art. And she showed me this pool. And it's 100-foot by 10-foot pool. And in order to create a piece of work inside of this pool, I'm going to have to build something. I had no idea how this was going to happen. However, my specialty du jour every day of my life is biting off more than I can chew. So once again, I bite this off and I tell her, I'm scared to do this, but I'm going to take this. 3 days later, she sends me an email. And the amazing folks who give their time and energy into keeping our great museum art park looking so good have contacted me and say, I have volunteers that will help you execute your vision. And I had tears in my eyes thinking that, you know, I'm going to say yes to something that I have no idea how to connect the dots on. I felt sick to my stomach when I said, yes, I will do this, but also sick to my stomach in that way that I see something and know that's what I have to do.
Oh, I see it in your face. You're absolutely convinced that there is nothing else you can do. This is the space you're going to be playing with.
Right, but how can I do it?
Oh, the universe brings us the how, mm-hmm. too, as you watched. So when we look at this exhibit, have any ideas? Can you give us a tease?
Absolutely, absolutely. My space is being done outdoors, and what I am going to do, most folks who are doing the displays inside are assigned a specific piece of art, and they then interpret that piece of art through the botanicals, primarily blooms. I, on the other hand, have been given a little more flexibility in this space because I think the outdoor spaces are not quite as regulated. So what I have decided to interpret in my space is what makes me the most excited about the art museum. And again, it's this 140-acre space that the LA landscape architect for the project, Daryl Morrison, he worked on Storm King, which is one of the most important sculptural gardens in the U.S. in upstate New York. He worked on the High Line, which is yet another articulation of great art. So I'm going to be giving a nod to his piece. So I'll be interpreting the art park itself and punctuating it with different meanings that really bring into, question the art park and questioning the idea of the bloom. And I have a very, very exciting element that I will be working into it that really shows that a bloom is not necessarily this big ephemeral piece. There's other things in the world that are blooms.
You're so ahead of your time. I'm listening to this. I'm listening to the fact that you're not looking at one piece inside a collection. You're bold enough to look at the whole collection, the museum, the piece of architecture that's there, the landscape architect, and the whole 140-acre mm-hmm. park. This is something that I'm really excited to see happen for you. And give us again a shout out. It's Art in Bloom. It's in early April, April 7th through the 10th. Is that right?
That is. It's excuse me. It's April 7th to 10th, okay. And it's North Carolina's second annual participation in this Festival of Art and Flowers.
Are they going to be taking pictures as your exhibit is working? Are you going to be this thing where we get to watch it from day to day, the progress, or is there be a great unveiling?
I think that's a great idea. Would you like to come and be my commentator?
Sign me up.
Yes, I definitely want to have photographs. And the easiest way to see what I am working on at any given time is my Instagram account. And we are Weston. It's not like the hotel. It's not Weston. It's Weston, WestonFarms. So Weston Farms. But I'm pretty overwhelmed by all of the ways that you can be working in social media. So I've just chosen one way to put up work, and that's on Instagram.
On Instagram, and that gives you a sense of all the beautiful things that are going on inside your life.
Really, the flavors of the day.
You know, our show often, our roots are all about courage. It's all about trying to figure out new medicine for vexing problems. It's also gaining a sense of guests with guts, and that is sometimes you have an expert. And that expert is very meaningful to the conversation, the dialogue, because it's education. It helps us and me learn more about things that I had no idea about. But it's a guest with guts that inspires me the most. And when listening to your stories in the first half, as well as now biting off more than you can chew, I'm thinking of you as a wonderful guest with guts, Erin.
Well, thank you.
And I gotta hope that you keep that biting off more than chew gene, because golly, what's next? I can't imagine what's happening in 2020 from here. So I, in wrapping up our show, we got a sense of how to connect with you. It's on your Instagram account, but you do have a website that's absolutely magnificent.
Oh, thank you.
And I believe it is a very simple website, westonfarms.com, westonfarms.com. And you've been around since 2002, mm-hmm. So you're not new to this rodeo. You know how this all works, and the artwork continues to grow, and your vision continues to unfold in quite exciting ways. We will definitely keep you in our queue, Miss Weston. Erin Deere, when you talk about all the work that you're doing at the Museum of History, North Carolina Museum of History.
Museum of Art. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Forgive me. I think that that's going to be groundbreaking for all of us North Carolinians to start recognizing the meaning of that work and the meaning of your work and vision. So when I move into the next few brews of our Courage cocktail, and Erin, this view has been a particularly sweet one for me, we're coming into this season. We do our creative cycles based on entrepreneurship. We're in the process of featuring entrepreneurs, and the reason for that is the advancement of women in entrepreneurs. But there's a little piece of your grandma that I was very impressed with, and that is she seemed to have a vision of her sense of belonging to the land and the land belonging to the people and the community. And so many of our works out here in WCOM Village here, our radio village, is all about giving back to our communities. So I want to, before we take the radio show out for this week, I want to give you a few headlines, what's coming down the pike. And one of those is coming in next week. We will be hosting Laura Baverman, Laura from the American Tobacco Campus over in Durham, to talk about the newest digital platform called Exit Event. Erin may be interested in this, but Exit Event is a meeting place for startups and entrepreneurs. It started out in Durham, but is now catching very quickly into Raleigh, Chapel Hill. It's gaining momentum, and it hosts monthly after-work socials throughout the Triangle. I've gone. She is crushing this space with people who need to grow more familiar with their neighbors in the startup space. In 2002, the startup space for this community may not have been as robust as it is now. So what we're seeing happening is this little ecosphere, very big ecosphere, is having the sensitivity and sensibility to reach out to each other, to learn from each other's mistakes, but also to get a sense of, wow, you know, I'm not alone. So many times, I don't know if this, Erin, if this felt this way to you, but when you do your own business, there's a sense of isolation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you have many horticultural friends in the business? Clearly not doing what you're doing.
I do. And I found that if I did not surround myself with horticulturists when I first moved here, which I believe is being articulated, the horticulture in the Raleigh-Durham area is really being studied and opened up to the public in a very world-class way with the collections at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum, Duke Gardens, and I had to surround myself with very high-level horticulturists and learn Latin. I often say that learning Latin was part of learning to interpret the riddles from my father. He was, you know, like the Sphinx. You had to learn the riddle to interpret everything because, and Latin was the key. Latin is universal. I can speak to anyone in the world by a Latin name, and that education certainly would not have happened if I'd first of all not taken a class. I went back as an older student. And when I went to UNC Chapel Hill for undergrad, but I went to state because I knew that unless I was tested on that, that I would not learn it. And I think going back as an older student, I didn't mind if I made a B or sometimes a C in undergrad, but making anything other than an A as a returning student was not acceptable.
I can't, you know, this is just stumbled in upon this in the last few minutes of the show. I'm a huge fan, obviously, of State and UNC. I returned to school to learn digital broadcast. I was very blessed to be part of the UNC Journalism School and studied under the great Dave Kopp. And always do a shout out to UNC School of Journalism. When I think about people learning what it takes, sometimes when we return as an older student, I think that our teeth and our appetite is so extreme that we put in the effort. And it's made a big difference in my life. And I can see it's made a big difference in yours.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to wrap up this show. And I hope you enjoyed today's Courage Cocktail Radio Show. We want to thank our sponsor, who is NC State, an EEED grant for the Advancement for Women Entrepreneurs. I also have to give a big shout out to Bill for managing all that sounds. Lots of heavy lifting today. We didn't drop a track. I'm very grateful to you. Stay tuned, of course, to our all social media. And Erin, I want to just do a shout out. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity and having the interest in sharing my journey at Weston Farms.
Oh, it's been an absolute privilege. I look forward to continuing our conversation for many years ahead. Thanks for listening today. You bring the lunch and I'll bring the courage cocktail.